The Stein Online Clubland Q&A begins right now.
Hey everyone, I hope you can hear me loud and clear. It is Laura Rosen-Cohen broadcasting from Mark Stein's seat. I have once again done a successful Zionist occupation of Mark's wonderful chair, keeping it warm for the guy as he does his very unexpected guest hosting gig. Doing American football. We all know how much Mark loves American sports, so he's got this great opportunity to do a fun gig. Like I said, he was a bit upset because they're calling it football still. We still have to get over those linguistic challenges. But as I say, Mark is really happy to be finally getting into the spirit of Americana, and we are going to try to get him to stop waving his own personal pocket-sized copy of the Constitutitutitution around in the locker room. So you guys are stuck with me, your uppity Jewish mom host, official Jewish mom of Mark Stein and of the Mark Stein Club, of course. Just warning you guys, I am in full domestic mode in my makeshift little studio in an undisclosed little Zionist habitation, and I promise that I am not going to beep, 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 I am not going to do that, but, you know, if you do hear little tidbits of domestic bliss in the background, it could be my special needs son with all his wackadoodle little YouTube videos. He finds the strangest things. I have not found a way to block his crazy YouTube stuff. So actually, I'm going to use this opportunity as a public service announcement. If anybody knows a workaround to block specific YouTube videos from one's child's phone, if there's a block workaround, do drop me a note in the comments or send me an email. You can always contact me. I'm always on X. X is my crack cocaine. Love X. You can find me in the comments section. And obviously, you can also just send me a note via the club, or you can send me a note even to my own email, my full name at gmail.com, if you want to get in touch. We have a lot of excellent questions already. So let's just get started. We are starting with you guys. It is Wednesday, September 25th. Of course, the entire world is absolutely insane. We have Northern Israel still on fire, Lebanon blowing up. We have Zelensky having been in America and American politicians signing bombs. The world is absolutely crazy. And who is supervising? Who is the alleged adult in the room? Well, apparently, it's Dr. Jill Biden, Herr Doctor of Education. Apparently it's her administration now. Did you guys see this clip of Dr. Jill holding court? Why are we all pretending this is normal? This is absolutely not normal. There's something really kooky going on, and everybody's just kind of whistling and trying to put their head down. It's weird stuff. America, stop breaking my heart. Really. Like, what is going on? Related to that, you know, we are getting closer to the American elections. So I'm not sure how we can possibly think that we're going to have fair and clean elections that are not going to be stolen or disgraced or election results tabulated 65 years after election night, when all of the time now, like on a nonstop basis, we are being shown exactly the insidious characters that we are dealing with the thuggery. You know, there's been a lot of headlines that suggest that important states are already notifying the public that election results will not be available that night. Like, they're already telling us we are going to cheat. Here's the states where it's going to happen. And, you know, as Mark Stein himself says, this election, the Trump side has to get beyond the margin of cheat. And that is a really big gap. It's like Grand Canyon sized gap now, guys. So I hope that in the past 4 years, some people, at least in the Republican establishment, have taken that seriously. Because even though people are predicting, oh, Trump's going to have a landslide, Trump's doing great, it's not going to matter if the corruption is beyond the point of no return. So I'm very worried about it. Even though I love some of the stuff that Trump's been doing, I love that he's brought RFK into the fold and many others. But again, we're dealing with very sinister forces. So I'm not sure if the GOP establishment is up to that task. So that is my little preamble for you guys. Like I said, you are stuck with me officially for the next hour, and we are going to go right to your questions. So let's take one at the top. This is from Eric Dale. Eric, thank you for your question. Of course, I knew it was you, you know, just by your friendly appellation of me as queen of the Q&A, long may she reign. So I do appreciate that, and it's very, very cute. But let's see what Eric is asking us today. Hey, Laura, queen of the Q&A, long may she reign. What are your thoughts on this recent trend of politicians signing bombs and artillery shells? Zelensky was recently in Pennsylvania signing a shell and endorsing Kamala Harris for president. But then a few months ago, Nikki Haley was doing the same thing while urging the Israelis to, quote, finish them, whatever finish means. Is there anyone amongst the so-called adults in the room that don't advocate a never-ending escalation? Shouldn't war be the absolute last option when all others have been exhausted? Well, yes, obviously. I mean, I think with war, if you're a civilized nation, then war, of course, is the last option. It's like Churchill with democracy, you know, democracy is the worst form of government, except for anything else. Well, war is the most unimaginable, torturous thing that humans can do one another. But sometimes I think that there is no choice. It is very creepy and freaky, this Zelensky tour. I think also, if I recall, this he was on, was he on Air Force One? Like, he was, it's, everything is inappropriate, everything. I mean, and the amount of money that has been funneled that way, the grift and the corruption, everything about it is unbelievable, but it just continues. And, you know, as Mark has pointed out, there is a very strange difference between the rhetoric, well, of this particular administration towards the war in Ukraine, like, you know, let's just fund that sucker till there's nothing left of anything on the planet. And then the difference in the way that Israel is expected to handle Hamas with kids' gloves. Now, is war good? No. None of these wars are good. Killing people in masses, none of this is good. Of course, war should be the last option. But, you know, wars are run by very failed humans, failed and flawed humans many of the times, mostly flawed. So it's actually astonishing that we get any, quote, good results. So I don't have any quick fix answers for you, Eric. I think that the whole Zelensky show reeks. It absolutely reeks. It's absolutely disgusting. And hopefully, if there's a chance that Trump can get into the White House again, I hope he will put a stop to that. You know, I hope that someday there will be a tabulation of the extraordinarily disgusting amount of money that has been wasted and this unnecessary war and all the lives lost on both sides of that conflict too, and both sides of other conflicts. That's a nice pessimistic way to kick off our afternoon. Sorry, guys. Hopefully we'll have some things. Feel free to ask lighter questions too. Like, I know Mark and myself and we're all about the civilizational doom and destruction, but, you know, Mark has musicals and theater and literature, and I also have my little things that I like to escape the real world with. And so you guys can feel free to, like, ask other lighter things if you are so inclined. Okay, moving right along, we have a question from Gregory. who says, "Hi, Laura. Looking forward to the guest host once again. I used to be a proponent of a two-state solution, not because I agree with the anti-Israel rhetoric from the Palestinian activists, but rather because it seemed like the only viable path to peace. Over the last year, this seems completely and utterly impossible. But the question then is, what's next? It's easy for Israel to justify razing Gaza to the ground, but the West Bank is a different animal. They'll still be neighbors. What do you see happening?" Thank you, Gregory, for that question. So we're going to, I guess, veer over to the Middle East for a little bit. I think for me, and I have been, obviously, I've been traveling to Israel for many years, family, friends, and studying it academically for a lot of years as well. I think the main problem is that people don't understand that the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, it's actually not Israel-Palestine, in my view. It is a religious conflict. The conflict is religious and not real estate. So the only way that it can be solved is when the religious factors curb their enthusiasm. So what I mean by that is we have basically this civilizational war, and the conflict, the religious conflict, has been a thing, you know, since Islam was founded. And it's not going to go away, but like, there have been instances, as we saw in the Abraham Accords, where the enthusiasm for the jihad part of the religion of Islam is tempered. And also we have now, I don't want to say benefit, but the situation on the ground has changed because of the nature of the conflict between Sunnis and Shias as well. So I think primarily we have to look at this conflict as a religious conflict. The national elements of it, I think, are a much more modern phenomenon, but there's no real estate solution to this problem. As for raising Gaza to the ground, I still think that there is the possibility that Gaza can become a beautiful place. I don't know if I would confidently call it a place that has potential to be like the Singapore of the Middle East, but who knows? But without the denazification of Palestinian society, I don't think much is going to change. And unfortunately, unlike, let's say, at the end of World War II, when, you know, Emperor Hirohito was disgraced, nuclear bombs were dropped, and also Nazi Germany was defeated, the Americans were the moral conscience of the world at that point. And they did a complete Nazification of the civil society in Germany. And we don't have anybody in America right now, because obviously America is led by either George Soros, President Obama, and Jill Biden, and Michelle Obama, and Hillary Clinton, or who knows who the heck is really running the show. But so there's no leadership, actually. And there's no moral conscience that is on the side of civilization. So we're in a really different place. But I think that is going to be what is required. So the West Bank, it is a very different beast, but I really hope that the intelligence people, if there are, and who they are in Israel, have their pulse, you know, on all of the Islamic jihadist factions, in the West Bank, because there are mumblings and rumblings of an October 7th type of ambition in the West Bank, in Judea and Samaria as well. And I think that I think Israel has to take that really, really seriously. So there have been a number of raids lately in Israel, in various hotspots in Judea and Samaria, but you know, it could well be that there is a movement similar to Hamas mounting there. And like I said, the aspiration is another October 7th. So we really have to beware. Again, a very heavy question. So bear with me. We'll see if anywhere down the road anybody asks me for a cookie recipe or something like that. All right, let's see if we can pull up a few more. Doing multi-screens, I am really proud of myself right now. So, okay, this is a good one here. Peter, thank you, Peter, for your question. We have here, oh, hello, Laura. Given the relative populations and Justin Castro's open border, do you think that it is inevitable that Canada will become a colony of Asia / South Asia? If so, will the founding stock population, aka quote Canadians, remain or leave Canada? Best, Peter. Yeah, that's a great question. Canada is really on the decline. If you've been following my columns, you know, I would say it started obviously just when Justin Trudeau came into power, but the most acute decline was really with the COVID tyranny that we experienced. And I've noticed big cities in Canada have become obviously dirtier, more crowded. There's just a lot more of a third world vibe. So Canada is on the decline, in my view. Demographically, we are importing no-skill, low-skill workers. There's a lot of really shady immigration practices, fake colleges for people to get visas, and then they never leave. They want to be permanent residents. Prices are very expensive. People can't afford housing. Like, basically every mark of a civilized society has gone into decline in Canada. So I don't think that if the Liberals stay in power, then that's not going to change. I'm not sure if Pierre Poilievre, even if elected, would be able to do a drastic policy about face, but the Canadian population is very angry about the immigration levels. And so public policy makers are going to have to pay attention, but it's like Mark says, they're not doing it because they are now suddenly going to do the right thing. It's because they're going to be forced by an increasingly angry population. They're going to be forced to stop doing the wrong thing, as Mark says. Leaving Canada, I would say that anybody who has options to go elsewhere should be investigating them, depending on what stage of life you're at, depending on what kind of assets you have. Basically, everybody that I talk to, and even immigrants to Canada who've been fairly well established in Canada, just as an example, a massage therapist that I happened to be speaking to a couple of months ago, and I couldn't place her accent. I was like, oh, are you from Ukraine or from Russia? And she's like, no, actually, I'm from Bulgaria. And we had a conversation about how Canada has really gone to the crapper. And she was talking about how she really just wants to save, excuse me, something like $40,000 or $60,000 in order to be able to buy a beautiful property in Bulgaria. And I was like, well, but that sounds pretty good. And she said, like a country home, you know, with all the fixings. She said private healthcare there is excellent. And it was funny because I said, oh, well, you know, I'm not sure I would necessarily fit in with my family in Bulgaria, you know, thinking she probably is aware of the not most excellent history of the Jews in a lot of Eastern Europe, although the situation for Jews in Eastern Europe is probably way better than it is anywhere in Western Europe right now. But she was like, oh, yeah, don't worry. We have Bulgarians love the Jewish people, and we have synagogues still that are functional. And I was pretty surprised. But, you know, that's just one example. And even Indian immigrants that I know who are professionals, nurses, engineers, like actual, they have credentials, they have been working in the profession for many years. Anybody that can is going to have an exit plan. And I think that anybody who has a chance with passports also should be accumulating those like little playing cards. You know, we came closest to escaping, really trying when it was COVID. You guys were following my column. Like, it was absolutely unbearable for most Canadians, but we were in a really, really tough spot. And that, I think, opened our eyes to the fact that we also, my own family, we have to have an exit plan. But I think that everybody should, if they can, have an exit plan from Canada, because I think things are going to get worse. And
I don't know. There's people who are still optimistic. Alberta is probably going to be doing okay. But in general, I think we're kind of at a point of no return in terms of the demographic shift that's happening in Canada. And I'll just give you an example and then we'll move on to another question. But, you know, I think something like 5,000 visas were recently granted to Gazans. And I remember discussing it with some of my friends and my people. And that seems like a lot to me because, you know, who knows what their political and religious and organizational affiliations are. It's not heavily vetted. But that, and 5,000, I think, would certainly have been enough for this virtue signaling government to make a big difference and to make things much more dangerous in Canada. But apparently, no, it's not 5,000. It's like 5,000 families. So the 5,000 families who get these gold-plated visas can bring in something like 5 or 6 members of their family. So it's like become 30,000 or 40,000 Gazans. And I mean, are we bringing in the doctors and the lawyers and the engineers, or are we bringing in like more people to work at Tim Hortons, if that? Or are they going to be more people, you know, like I used to see when I took my son to Sick Children's Hospital? I mean, I was waiting for months and months to see various specialists. And you know who did the best business in the Sick Children's Hospital in our socialized system? The translators. They were always really busy because there were families of 6 or 8 kids, often families of multiple disabled children from communities that had consanguinal habits. Anyways, it basically all this to say that it's going downhill and it's going to keep going downhill. And then the demographics are going to be irreversible. So it's, you know, my friend and compatriot Ezra Levant calls it the new Canada. It's Justin Trudeau's new Canada. And that's really what it is. And I'm not sure what, if anything, is going to be reversible. Actually, it's bad news, guys. Okay, I'm still waiting for the fluffy bunny questions, guys. Okay, let's see what we've got here. We've got Toby Pilling. Let's see. Do you think Keir Starmer may be able to arrange for the sausages to be returned from Gaza? What I can say about the UK is also just everything about it is a disaster. I like that there's some fighting spirit left in people, but I am really ever more terrified by the stories that are coming out about the two-tier Keir justice system and the imprisoning of people for social media posts. It's really altogether very terrifying. So, you know, I used to have a column in my old blog called The UK is Screwed. And I just used to have like all these examples of why it was screwed. And obviously that has accelerated to a really significant degree. But this Keir Starmer guy is super dangerous. He is, I think he's on that evil scale. I mean, you know, right up there with Justin Trudeau and Jacinda Ardern and all those other, and Dan Andrews. Like these are really bad people. They are bad humans with a lot of power. So yeah, it's not good. Okay, let's see what we've got here. Oh, Alyssa has also asked me what mind-bendingly awful TV shows I watch. Do I watch them so we don't have to, or would you recommend we watch too? Okay, so yeah, sometimes, you know, at the end of the day, Mr. C and I do unwind and we find lots of random stuff. Now, I will say that because I speak Hebrew, sometimes we veer more into Israeli shows, which are actually really very entertaining. I'm not sure if all of them have subtitles, but like I'm sure most of you out there have already watched Fauda. Season 1 and 2 were excellent. There's the really bad one that I was watching, and I think I might have mentioned it in the comments in my column last week, is Emily in Paris. It's like a train wreck. Like the acting is not every actor. Some of the actors I thought were very good, and I really just got really chuffed because I could understand most of the French that was spoken by the French actors, and I didn't need the translation. But it's train wreck kind of thing. Like it's so bad it's good, and I got completely hooked on it. And it's totally a chick series, because of the guys who are like the lead heroes. Just let me take a sip of water. So yeah, I mean, I binge watched like basically all four seasons of that. And then there was another one, I can't remember the name of it, but if anybody's interested, I will follow up. There's a series about French, it's a French family who deal in luxury real estate in Europe, but I mean, most particularly in France. And it's funny because like my Judar was going off. I said to my husband, I'm like, this family seems Jewish. And he's like, what are you talking about? Now, this is a very Jewish thing, is like to identify other Jews and to like be all Jewish geography about it. Anyways, so this family, I can't remember their last name, but then I went down the rabbit hole because there was a scene where they had one of the boys, they have like four adult boys, and one of them was getting married, and then they put the one of them on a chair, and that's like a very Jewish thing to do at a wedding. So they're for sure Jewish. They're very secular, assimilated Jews. And sure enough, like once I went down the rabbit hole, of course I was right, but it's actually entertaining. It's interesting to see very old money in Europe. I found that very entertaining. So I got to get the name of that series back to you guys. Then there's other super cheesy, like real estate ones, like Owning Manhattan. That was too cringe for me. I can't do that. One of my kids likes the one about California real estate, you know, $1 Million Sunset. I don't know. Some of them are even too much for me. And then otherwise I like to binge on like Home and Garden television and Judge Judy. I still love Judge Judy, and there's lots of reruns. So Alyssa, I hope that gives you a little bit of crap, you know, mind candy for a little while. Okay, let us see what else we've got here. And just to make a note, we are about at our halfway point. And so we've got about another half an hour to deal with your questions. So just keep them coming. Okay, we have here, this looks like a comment rather than a question, but that's okay too. We have Fearless Freep. And as Mark says, possibly not his real name, but who knows? And no pronouns. So I don't even know if it's a he, a she, a they, them. We can try to investigate this later. Anyways, Fearless Freep writes, any comments on the observations made by some that, quote, woke has peaked and that pushback to it is gaining momentum? One can only hope. That is a very good question, Fearless Freep. There are some instances where I see, for example, parents speaking at school board meetings and really giving these guys and ladies a real thrashing about some of the disgusting things that are going on in the school. And that gathers some momentum. And then there's parents who fight back about, you know, sex education, quote unquote, all the sexual stuff in schools. And so that is encouraging too. And what is important is that at least there is a platform now where when these things do happen, when people do show some courage and some fighting spirit, that there is at least a social media platform where it can be shared and viewed and discussed. So again, that's a testament to Elon Musk really and the purchase of X, and I think how important this is for there to be at least one social media platform where some of these things can be out in the open and discussed. I don't think I don't know about peaked and I don't know about momentum. I think there was sort of a watershed moment with the debate. I think that's going to be one of those moments that a lot of people, I would say, you know, from young adults, just at the start of their voting career, right up to boomers and older people, it was a real eye opener, and it is going to be one of those moments that changed a lot of people's opinions and their approach to politics. And it was like a very humbling thing to realize that they had been lied to for so long with so much chutzpah, nonstop, bald-faced lies about the condition of Joe Biden. And then the about face that happened so quickly once they were caught. So I think that to me seems like a watershed moment where people are going to remember where they were when they were watching that debate unfold and seeing, you know, with their own eyes, the extent to which they had been lied to. But I'm not sure if that is enough to, first of all, to break the spell of Democrats who are still going to vote Democrat, although a lot of people have, I think, walked away from the Democrat Party, particularly Latinos and Black, like African Americans, who are really so much worse off under the current administration. So the thing is, the evil, or what I sometimes call like the big blob, the evil blob, it goes beyond woke. You know, woke is just like one of the tentacles. Am I saying that right? I don't think I've had enough caffeine today. But anyways, it's bigger than that. It's really bigger than woke. Woke is just one of the threads of this. I think I overall subscribe to a much more spiritual view of what's happening. And I think, for example, Dr. Naomi Wolf has written a lot about this, kind of feeling like there's sort of a supernatural, non-human energy to a lot of this stuff, it being implemented by humans, but it seems like they are under the spell and under the control of very, very dark and scary forces. So, you know, I've said before that, like, Jews don't believe in the devil per se, but I can't help but feel these very dark currents. And I started to feel it really like the day, I remember when we were told to go home from work, when the lockdown started, and I just had this icy cold feeling that there was something really dark happening, and that hasn't really gone away. So I think there's definitely examples of tremendous courage. There is a lot to be said for the fighting spirit in individuals and in individual states and in individual countries. But there's something much, much bigger than the woke virus or the woke America's export of wokeness to other countries. It seems to me more, you know, like the tip of the iceberg. So, and I see the evil forces as being partly supernatural, but also the constellation of woke maybe being the foot soldiers, but also the alliance of Shia, Islam, i.e., you know, Iran, and Qatar's influence, along with communist China. These are really bad forces. And so it could be that American woke has maybe peaked because people got a dose of reality, but there's definitely bigger waves out there that we have to worry about. Okay, just had to have a little bit more water here, and I'm gonna see. I'm really desperate, you guys, for something a little bit more a little more fluffy. Okay, let's see what we've got here. Oh, we got a huge pile of new stuff. Okay, so let's see. We've got Rachel Aronoff, who says, "Dear Laura, unfortunately, I agree with Trump that if he loses, it will be to some extent because of the Jews. We Jews live in clustered in counties in swing states where a difference of 15,000 to 45,000 votes can decide the election. My question is, what do we do the day after? How do we love each other when our own brethren seem more invested in not electing Republicans, excuse me, and unseating Bibi than in defending each other? My second question is, who is running the U.S. right now? The video of Michelle Obama peddling diet sodas at Costco gives me the impression that her husband is not the behind the scenes ruler of the free world. Okay, so a lot to unpack there. Thank you, Rachel, for the question. So, sure. I mean, will it be because of the Jews? Yes, you have made a good point about the Jews who live in the clusters in swing states. And of course, that is an issue. I mean, how to penetrate people to convince them that they're voting against their own interests, it's impossible. But these Jews are sometimes impenetrable because they are primarily Jews in name only, meaning that they're not very literate Jewishly. They have their bagels, they have their Lux, but they don't read Hebrew. They don't know about Jewish philosophy or prayer. They don't really read the Torah. They don't go to synagogue very much. They're much more leftist than Jews. So I don't really have an answer. That's just my explanation of why they are still voting Democrat. They are very misguided, and they make religious pillars of faith out of things that are not Jewish values, like abortion. And it's very misguided, and it really is unfortunate. So all we can do is hope and pray that there will be some enlightenment. In terms of the day after, how do we love each other? Oh, that's such a good question. I mean, that is a very big commandment in Judaism, is to love one another, but it can't be forced. Hopefully there will just be politeness. I think that's the best that we can hope for at this point. And in terms of who is running the U.S. right now, I think there's a couple possibilities. I don't think there's that many possibilities. It's either a constellation of like the Obamas with, you know, the elderly Alta Cuckers of the Democrat Party, like Pelosi and Schumer and that sort of thing, along with, you know, George Soros, again, behind the scenes. Or I think Mark suggested one time that it could be something far more deep and more cynical, and that road could lead to Beijing. That's the other possibility. And I could be wrong. Mark could be wrong. We both could be wrong. But you can let us know what you think. I think those are the only two real possibilities. Oh, there we go. There's a weird YouTube video. Okay, you're going to have to listen to some background, guys, for a second. There we go. We got rid of YouTube. My son was wondering where mommy was. Okay, let us move right along. We have Suzanne Rini, who says, "Greetings, Laura. What do you think the odds are of Canada's Conservative Party achieving a vote of non-confidence against the Liberals before the end of the year? Thank you for keeping Mark's seat warm today." So, Suzanne, I'm not really sure. I mean, on a different plane, I think lately Justin Trudeau is looking absolutely terrible. Like, I actually think he looks sort of ill, like not well physically and mentally. It could be that there is a little bit of conspiring going on against him, even in his own party. I think they see the writing on the wall, but I don't know. I'm not really sure what will happen before the end of the year. I mean, one can hope, right? We'll see what happens. I think there's no question that he's not going to be the party leader. The knives are coming out. There's no doubt about that. And look, Canada might experience a bit of a blip of recovery if Poilievre gets elected with a majority. But the trajectory is still not great. So we'll see what happens. We're going to live and learn. All right, moving along. What else have we got here? We have Olga from Arizona, who says, "Hi, Laura. It's always so nice to hear you. Appreciate you taking the time out of Holy Day preparations. I'm wondering how Andrew's campaign is going. Have you kept up with him? Best wishes and Lashana Tova." That is New Year's greetings, Olga. So, you know, I am going to get, that is actually a great idea. I'm going to get an update from our wonderful Andrew Lawton, and I am going to include it in this week's links. I'm going to make a special note. I'm going to get you an update on where his campaign is going. For those of you who don't know, Andrew Lawton is running a campaign to be the Conservative Party representative for his area, for his riding, And if he can snag that, he is like most assuredly going to be a member of our federal parliament, and he will be an excellent one. So he just has to get that nomination for his riding. And I know that he's been working really hard. It is a really, really difficult slog, and we wish him all the best. And I promise you, Olga, and everybody, that I'm going to get a brief update of where things are at, and I will include that in Laura's links, which will be appearing tomorrow, so you guys can watch for that as well. Excuse me. All right, let's see what we've got here. We have, it is Jamie Marsh, who says, "Hi, Laura. Thanks for hosting the Q&A this week. My question is this. The first two Trump assassination attempts had U.S. deep state written all over them, with the second one even more brazenly with inside help than the first, in my opinion. I'm pessimistic that Trump will survive the next round of U.S. deep state assassination attempts, much less beat the Dem margin of steel and win the election. But assuming he does win the election, what do you make of his chances of surviving his first year in office?" Thank you, Jamie, for that question. And I have to say, I basically agree with you. The first two attempts, I mean, like, I think we have to also take a step back, that we're talking about this in a very normalized way, which means that America is in very deep, deep trouble. Like, it's bad enough that the heightened divisions in America have led to conditions that are very reminiscent. I mean, it is almost a civil war. There's sort of a de facto civil war going on between left and right in America anyways. But, you know, now we're talking about assassination attempts of a U.S. president in language generally that is not terrifically excited. And that's very strange. People in the media wanted us to forget about it right away. That's also really strange. So there's all kinds of complicit behavior, and it's all not very good. And, you know, it is truly miraculous, really. It is miraculous that Trump survived the first assassination attempt, you know, the turning of the ear. And, you know, somebody, I did write a little bit about that, and then I did see comments from people who were like, well, the poor guy who got murdered, but when he got the father who was there, who got murdered attending a political rally, how can we say that there was divine intervention when Trump was saved and this poor dad got murdered? And, you know, my answer to that would be that basically we don't know what God's mission for each of us is on earth. And I do believe, and I read a great column, I'll have to remember to post it, by a rabbi in California. He's like from Orange County. He's very conservative, right wing, very learned. He's also like a lawyer, so he knows, you know, a lot about the Constitution and American history and the American political stuff. And he was saying that he just hopes that Trump, it sort of like don't tempt fate, like don't tempt God to like be more challenging to you. You are a messenger, you have this role, so just take it seriously and don't try to like overdo the messaging, and don't tempt God. I'll post it because I'm kind of making like a bit of a mishmash of what he's saying, but Trump, I think it must be clear also to the left and to these demonic forces that Trump has a mission, and that is why they are trying so hard to get rid of him. And they've tried many other tools, but ultimately what they want to finish the mission is his death. And that is really scary. And so we're kind of at the point of no return in America, in American politics, because of that. So obviously, as a start, if I were Trump or in his circles, I would have absolutely zero faith in any of the three-letter agencies that are supposed to protect him, like zero. You know, he can afford private protection, I would have like a ring around him all the time and just not trust any security providers that weren't his inside people. Obviously there's no real guarantee to keep him safe. I don't think in any possible way. There's always going to be things happening. But what we do know is that the wish for him to be dead and the number of people who are okay with that and willing to act on that, whether they're impressionable schlubs from their mother's basement or, you know, sort of wackadoodle political activists that eventually want to pick up a weapon. I don't think that there's a shortage of them, and there's nothing being done to tamp down the rhetoric and tamp down the number of people that will fall into the assassination path. So that is really scary. I think that the sentiment of the American people, I think they are with Trump, but like I've said for actually many, many years, that I think that the election system is just like way too corrupt right now to be able to recover. Like I don't see any way that the American elections can be clean. Does that make sense to you guys? Maybe I'm not describing it right, but I just, unless, I haven't seen any evidence that over the past 4 years, there's been a real cleanup effort. I know that there's been some lawsuits and some progress has been made, but I feel like, and I could be wrong, that the GOP has been asleep at the wheel. And that's kind of a hard thing to figure out unless they just want to be asleep at the wheel, unless they like losing, unless it's more profitable or enjoyable to be sort of in opposition and whining about the state of everything. I'm not sure how great the conservative movement is or the Republicans in America, and we'll see what happens in Canada, but we don't always utilize our power when we have it. The left, you know, they go all in. They go all in on the power. They go all in on everything. And the right is reluctant. And I think that the root of that is sort of that live and let live mentality that we can't really shake, and an unwillingness or an inability to understand that sometimes you have to deal head on, or like one of our first questions, sometimes you have to go to war. There's no middle ground. Some things cannot be negotiated with. And that's a very hard concept for people to digest, that sometimes you are really fighting evil, you are fighting a war, human life is at stake. Those are hard things for people to digest. And the right is much more about live and let live, but the left is not. So we have some very basic problems of our approach to the world. And I think it's very rare to find somebody like, for example, President Trump, who does have those big picture, that big picture vision, and kind of understands what the underlying currents are. Even though people think he might be very superficial, I think that that's a mistake. And actually, I saw something very interesting on Twitter that I think proves that point. Let me just get a little sip. So I think Trump posted on Truth Social maybe yesterday or the day before. He met with the leader of Qatar. I can't remember now if it's an emir or a sheikh or a whatever. Now, I'm not a big fan of Qatar. Qatar is the big buddy of Hamas. You know, what, instead of saying bring them home now, it should be Qatar, let them go now. But there's nobody to pressure Qatar, obviously, or Qatar. And so Trump posted on Truth Social, or maybe it was even on X, that he had a great meeting with the Emir of Qatar. Great. They used to be really good friends. They're still going to be friends. He's an excellent guy, or blah, blah, blah. And I noticed a few people on X and whatever commenting like that kind of a post, like flattering the Emir of Qatar is not exactly how to solidify your pro-Israel credentials. Now, that would be true if you took it at a surface level. And I feel like we should probably be aware that Trump, despite seeming to be gruff and surface sometimes, I believe that there is a bit of Machiavellian real politic in that guy. And if he published such a tweet to me, I see that as more like a warning to the Emir of Qatar. I really do. Now, you can go at me at the comments if you think I'm wrong, but I think it was like, nice emirate you got there. Nice sheikhdom. Nice fiefdom you got there, Mr. Emir of Qatar. Would be a real shame if anything happened to it. I think it was a warning shot. Again, you guys are totally free to disagree with me, but I think it was like an opening salvo, like when I'm back in the White House, if, please God, Trump gets in, that was a warning. Because I don't think, really, I don't think October 7th would have happened in Israel if Trump were in office. I really don't. And I think if Trump can be back in office, that there's less chance of an October 7th, not just for Israel, but for anywhere else. And again, I always say it's not just about Israel. These forces of darkness, this unholy alliance between the evil communists, which Western civilization is funding, by the way, by buying all their crap and having everything made in China. Our funding of communism and the alliance of communism with the worst totalitarian, Nazi-ist, Islamism, all those elements, that alliance, and then with the woke threads, this is really dangerous, bad stuff. And a lot more of it has happened under the, quote, Biden administration. They've gotten much more powerful and emboldened. So many bad things have happened. It's just the world has been like on fire, you know, in flames. And world leaders who are on the more dark side of things were genuinely and rightly afraid of President Trump. And that's the way it should be. And that's really what we need. And I think I personally think that the choice of J.D. Vance, I think J.D. Vance is doing a fantastic job with media. I think he's really hitting a lot of great notes out there, really not taking a lot of guff from the mainstream media. He's got a really good approach, and I think he's making some headway. I think also, okay, this might sound completely crazy, and again, I'm just Canadian. I'm just an uppity Jewish mom from suburbs of Toronto. But from an outsider point of view, I think that Vivek Ramaswamy is doing an amazing job also in the media. I don't know about all his policy stuff. I don't think he was presidential material. But okay, now hear me out. Can you picture him as the press secretary? What do you think of that? Like, I think he would be dynamite in that role. Like, he is really good at explaining a lot of concepts. His mind works very quickly. I've watched a lot of clips of him speaking to young people and explaining things to them in a way that they find really hard to get their backups about. Anyways, let me know what you think about that. I think that Trump has put together a constellation of really interesting people. I don't think that there's any doubt that the constellation that he's put together are people who truly love America. I love that this alliance with RFK, making America healthy again. How good is that? Like, really, America, you know that I love you. I love you, America. I mean, you gotta stop breaking my heart. And you also have to stop being so fat. Please, you have to stop. You have to stop. Like, it's crazy. Stop with the Ozempic. Please. Please get healthy. 70% of Americans or 78% of Americans are obese. You guys, you gotta stop it. You have to stop letting your kids have disgusting lunches that are made by companies who are putting processed food into your kids. You have to put some stuff between two pieces of bread and shove an apple into a lunch bag. You have to move more. America, seriously, like, I know it sounds very Jewish mother of me right now, but like, this is serious stuff. America is very unhealthy. And if you guys are going to win any of these battles, you need to really be up for the tasks. You need to take care of your minds. You need to hone your skills at explaining things. You need to be able to converse and argue with people. And you need to be of healthy body and of healthy mind. So I don't want to preach too much. We are actually getting to the end of our time together. But we need America's leadership. We, the world, the civilized world, we need American leadership. So like I said, my chief concern at this point is that the system is too corrupted to, quote, allow Trump to get in for a second term. Obviously, I really, really, really hope I'm wrong about that. But that's my feeling. Okay, I think we have time, guys. It's about 5 to 4. And we have one question. Somebody has really kindly taken up my offer of some fluffy bunny stuff. And so I think this probably will be our last question. And it is from a clockwork cabbage. So a clockwork cabbage, pronouns unknown, says, okay, you want fluffy? You've got fluffy. What do you think of the, quote, so bad it's good movie genre? You know, Ed Wood et al. Why is it that something officially deemed a flop becomes something so endearing and cool to some? Is this a modern version of the sadistic laugh at the Village Idiot? Okay, that's a good question. So I think that a lot of people are just full of crap. How's that for an answer? And I'll illustrate that with an anecdote that goes back to my university days, millions of moons ago. So I was friends with some guys, and one of their sister went off to study at a university elsewhere in Ontario, and she lived in the dorms, and it was like a party university, blah, blah, blah. And she came back home for her first weekend after, you know, having lived off dorm food. And I think her mom made macaroni and cheese. and then she goes into the kitchen, heads for the fridge, and takes the ketchup out. And this was like, they'd never eaten macaroni and cheese like that. They used to just pile on the cheese and the butter and, you know, regular macaroni and cheese. And they were like, yo, that is disgusting. Why are you putting, who puts ketchup, literally, who puts ketchup on their macaroni and cheese? And she's like, yeah, I know it's completely disgusting, but you do get used to it and then it's good. And that has always stuck with me. Like, it is disgusting. So ketchup on macaroni and cheese is totally disgusting. And some of these movies and these TV shows, they are totally, they're just bad. It's bad and nobody really wants to say the truth. So they just kind of go along with it. I'm thinking of even rewatching like Rocky Horror Picture Show, because I'm thinking that's also bad. I don't know. I have thoughts about that. We can certainly go into that and other movies. If you want to drop it some comments, we could also discuss the things that other people think are awesome, but you actually think or you know are disgusting and crap. If you want to be a truth teller, if you want to drop some truth bombs into the comment section about things that people rave about that you just cannot grok, whether it's TV or books or movies, anything that is in popular culture or otherwise, or foods, some things that you think are overrated, definitely interested in hearing your thoughts about that. So I think I am going to take one last look at our questions. If there's anything that is really, really, really on your mind still, guys, and we didn't get to, then we will try to pick up any of the remaining topics. I'll try to get to maybe in the column or otherwise.
But I think that's about it. We've kind of come to the end of our time here. So I'm going to sign off. Thank you very much for tuning in, for listening. Thank you to everyone who is a member of the Mark Stein Club. If you are not a member and you're just listening, that is awesome. But do know that your support of the Mark Stein Club enables us to do all kinds of groovy things like columns that you see and Mark's essays, helping Mark fight all the various battles that he is fighting on our behalf. I will also endeavor to get the Andrew Lawton update to all of you guys. And with that, I am going to sign off and honored to be here. Hope to see you guys again soon and have a wonderful rest of your day. Thank you so much, guys.
Clubland Q&A is a production of Mark Stein Enterprises and Oak Hill Media. All rights reserved.